and opened the door. Jack stepped out first and helped Caroline from the carriage. She kept a decorous distance once she reached the ground. Mama had eyes and spies, after all. "Good night, Mr. Culhane," she said. "Thank you for the escort home."
"My pleasure," he said.
But there had to be much more pleasure than what they had shared, and Caroline was determined to make it hers. Flora was tired, the sort of tired that came from having too little to do, and yet she could not sleep. Jack and Caroline had rushed out a half hour earlier, and the staff had long ago gone off to sleep. Flora was jealous. She wished for just one night in which she would not wake, but knew tonight would not be it. The house's front bell rang. Flora left the sofa where she'd been curled up like a child, seeking warmth. She would have ignored the summons, except it might be Caroline again. The girl was showing all the signs of perpetual wanderlust, which Flora could appreciate. She peeked out of the door's sidelight, then blinked. She checked again to see if her eyes were being as faithless as her ability to sleep had become since Clem's death. No, her eyes remained true. Jack's father stood in the doorway, looking little different from when she'd last seen him 14 years earlier. And the hurt she'd felt that night still lingered, too. But she'd never believed the old adage about time healing all wounds. Cursing herself for being a fool, Flora opened the door. "Hello, Patrick. This must be the night for Culhane's to roam," she said. "Jack left just a little while ago."
"Are you asking me in, then?" Patrick said.
He sounded as Irish as always, and apparently she was as soft as always for the music in his words. "I suppose," she said curtly. He smiled.
"As kind as ever."
"Too kind," she said as she led him to the salon. This time she did not choose the sofa, but a tall chair that was quite regal. Better yet, the chair opposite it was squat. Of course, Culhane still managed to look commanding while sitting in the blasted thing. Now that she could see him in full light, she noted the deepening of the lines at the corners of his eyes and the added threads of silver in his dark hair. But like his son, he was one handsome devil.
"You're looking tired, Flora," he said.
"That's a fine compliment. Since I invited you in at this late hour, the least you could do is offer some hollow flattery." He laughed.
"Is there any other kind of flattery but hollow?"
She wanted to smile, but didn't. "How did you know I was here?" He looked down before answering.
"I saw an article in the Times about who was summering in Newport."
"Really?
I don't know whether to be more astounded that you were reading the social news or that I was mentioned." "I was on a train," he said, as though that explained everything.
She raised her brows in response. He stretched his long legs in front of him, no doubt trying to find a way to be comfortable in the short chair.
"I was sorry to hear about your husband's passing."
Flora ignored the sting of tears behind her eyes. When on stage, she'd always been able to cry at will. Now she could not seem to stop. "I appreciated the note," she said.
"It was nothing. I know how deeply a loss like that can cut into a soul."
She nodded. "Yes, but I promised Clem I would pick up my life, and I will."
"I'm sure you will," he said.
Coming from him, the words sounded a little sad. Some people never fought free of the grief. Patrick had been one, though she hadn't understood at the time. All she'd known was that she'd loved him, but he hadn't been able to love her back, at least not in the way she'd wanted him to, with vows and babies and forever together. "In time, I'll be better," she replied. "It has been a year since I lost him, but sometimes it still feels like yesterday. Right now, I'm focusing on each day, each new adventure." Because really, she had nothing else.
"Well then, you have a plan, and that's half the battle."
"I suppose," she said. They sat quietly for a moment. Then Patrick spoke again.
"I want you back in my life, Flora," he said in a rush. "Not as a lover, mind you, because I've no right to put a claim on your heart after all we've been through. but I miss you. I miss the laughter and the teasing, and the knowing that if I'm being a bullheaded fool, you'll be the first to tell me. You can chase me out of here with that fire poker over there, he said, pointing to the fireplace set. You likely should, but I knew that if I didn't ask now, I'd lose the courage to ask at all. Never had he come to her hat in hand, well, actually hatless, like he was at this moment. Flora was touched. You lose courage? She shook her head. Patrick O'Hane, you are the boldest man I've ever met. Aye, and in some ways the thickest too, or I wouldn't be here today trying to rebuild what I ruined. She smiled. I won't deny that. So then, will you do me the honor of being my friend? Flora knew the answer, even if she didn't feel completely comfortable letting him into her life again. I don't think either of us are so rich that we can afford to lose a friend, she said. A smile slowly spread across his face. You always were the smartest woman I knew. And in some ways, the thickest, too, Flora thought. But a life with both Colhanes far surpassed a life without them. Chapter 11 Da must be having a regular Irish hooly, Jack thought. The coachman had just pulled up in front of the Touro Park house, and all the lights on the ground floor were ablaze. Jack retrieved his top hat from beneath the bench where he'd sent it earlier, brushed it off, and set it back on his head. If there were guests, he couldn't enter the house looking as tired and frustrated as he felt. Wilton opened the front door before Jack had even made it to the steps.
I take it my father has company, Jack said as he entered.
No, sir, the butler replied, closing the door after Jack. Your father is not in residence.
Then you have guests?
Hardly, sir. Mr. Edward Maxwell has guests. At the moment, they're in the billiards room.
Jack started to ask the unflappable Wilton another question, but decided to go to the source. He handed the butler his hat and headed to Eddie.
It's about time you made it home, his friend said when Jack came into the billiards room.
Eddie, who was in his shirt sleeves, looked to be losing a game to Charles Vandermeulen. Robert Connable and Harold Van Andel, two more of their customary New York set, were watching. Jack gave all four a hello, but kept an eye on Eddie.
I had Wilton set me up with a room, Eddie said without looking away from the shot he'd begun to line up. I didn't think you'd mind.
Charles came over to shake Jack's hand.
I'd have had him stay with us when he arrived, but Harriet has the house packed with girls. Wedding plans or some such other female thing. The giggling is enough to kill a man. We all decamped for the night. If you don't mind putting the rest of us up here until her blasted picnic tomorrow, we'd be obliged.
Jack hoped it wasn't his wedding to Harriet being planned, because that was a non-event.
You're welcome to stay, he told Charles.
Grand, old man. You and I might as well get used to each other's company, if you know what I mean, Charles said.
Jack made a non-committal noise in response.
Which brings to mind, Harriet is worried that you haven't said whether you'll be at tomorrow's picnic. It will be the usual lot. Harriet, the Maxwell sisters, some of the Vanderbilt girls, and an Astor or two. She asked me to inquire if I saw you.
Da's belief that Jack needed a secretary was beginning to ring true.
I've been away on new business and have to spend tomorrow catching up on other matters, Jack said. Please give your sister my apology for the late response and also my regrets.
Charles's demeanor drooped.
You're sure you can't appear for a short while? She has four girls to every man as it is. Take some pity on the rest of us and save us from being swarmed.
Jack smiled at the image of the men smothered in heaps of lace and parasols and ridiculously large-brimmed hats.
Tell you what, I'll try to drop in.
You have my gratitude, Charles said.
Vandermeulen, you're shot, Eddie said from across the room.
Charles grinned just as a robber baron's son should at the scent of fresh money.
Time to finish him off.
Jack looked to Wilton, who had taken care of Jack's hat and now stood next to the doorway.
Wilton, three more rooms, please.
Already done, sir, and I shall retire to my quarters unless you have further need of me.
Jack thanked the butler and sent him on his way. Eddie joined Jack while the other men took bets on how long it would take Charles to empty Eddie's pockets.
"What happened at Villa Blanca?" Jack asked Eddie. "My mother didn't stick to her vow to stay in her room. You were just out the door when she appeared. You'd think I'd told her I'd sent Caroline off with the devil when I said you'd be bringing her home. She filled my ears with lectures about young ladies going about unaccompanied with men."
Eddie shook his head.
"Unbelievable. There we were, talking about you, not the local Lothario. You've known Caroline since she was small enough to climb trees. You're practically her brother."
Or not, Jack thought.
"I pointed out to Mother how close to family you are, and she had one of her fits," Eddie said. "Once she was settled, I decided that Mildred Longhorn's house is no place for a man."
"What about Rosemead? It's sitting vacant," Jack suggested.
He didn't want to be inhospitable, but for a group of people with damn big houses, why did they have to be under each other's feet?
"That was my first stop," Eddie said. "Mother has guards posted. She has locked down the cottage until the big costume ball for the Englishman next Tuesday. Apparently, she wishes no one to see the improvements to the house or property before then, not even her own son. The guards are so cowed that I could have told them I was the Lord Almighty and they still wouldn't have let me in. So on I went to Charles's, and here we are."
"There's a ball for Bremerton?" Jack asked.
He was surprised Caroline hadn't mentioned it to him. But then again, their most recent encounters had been brief and not taken up with talk.
"The invitation isn't that direct, but Mother's intent in having a party is clear. Check that stack of correspondence on the desk in the library. Your invitation has to be there, and I've already responded to my mother for you, of course."
"I should just hire you," Jack said.
Eddie looked a tad alarmed.
"What?"
"Nothing, just thinking aloud," Jack replied.
"How long are you planning to stay here?"
"I don't know for certain. When Father gets here, I suppose I could always stay aboard the Conqueror if we're bumping elbows too much, but I'd much rather stay ashore."
In a lower voice, he added,
"I don't like it getting around, but I have no love for the sea. The thought of nights spent bobbing in that boat. Well, let's just say I'd prefer the worst room at the seediest tourist hotel in town."
A ship the size of the Conqueror would barely sway in protected Newport Harbor, but Jack could appreciate a healthy dislike of something. He was feeling the same way about Harriet's picnic.
"I'm sure we'll work it out here," Jack said.
"I knew I could count on you," Eddie said while clapping him on the shoulder. "Are you ready for some billiards?"
"Sorry, but I'm ready for some sleep."
"What? The night is young. It's nowhere near dawn."
Eddie took his professional life of leisure very seriously.
"And I'm the only one in this room who has spent the past 2 days shoveling manure," Jack said. "I'll thrash you at billiards another time."
"Don't be so sure. I'm just setting Charles and the rest of them up for the big kill," Eddie said.
"Enjoy,"
Jack replied. He eyed the door, making ready to escape. Fate wasn't being kind, though. Da walked in, looking uncharacteristically dapper. And dapper wasn't a word Jack ever thought would come to mind about Da. His suit was brand new, and his shirt so white that it nearly blinded.
"To think I left an empty house not so long ago. What's afoot here?"
Da asked the men. He picked up Charles's cut crystal glass and sniffed the contents.
"I need to be naming this place Valya Ishkavaha."
"Excuse me, sir?"
Robert Connable asked.
"And here you're so proud of your fine college educations," Da said. "That means house of whiskey in Irish. Contrary to my son's beer-loving ways, 'tis whiskey that's a water of life. Speaking of which, did you save any for me?"
"Of course, sir,"
Robert Connable said, before speedily pouring Da a glass and bringing it over. Da toasted Robert.
"Slancha."
The party was in good hands. Jack made another break for freedom.
"Not so fast, son," Da said. "I'd be having a word with you. Come over this way, if you would."
Jack followed Da to the far corner of the walnut-paneled room. Eddie and the other guests were either too polite or too occupied with wagering to pay mind to them. Jack would guess it was the latter.
"Is there any reason you didn't think of telling me that Flora is back from San Francisco and staying in this very town?"
Da asked.
"That's Flora's choice to make, and not mine," Jack replied. "She didn't contact me, either.
I crossed paths with her on the trip from the city.
Crossed paths or engraved announcements, it doesn't matter. You're my son and you should have told me.
Di hadn't said that in a gruff but kindly sort of way. He was annoyed. Jack wasn't feeling too happy either.
How was I to know it mattered to you? Jack asked. Of course it would matter. A man would have to be an idiot to think it wouldn't,
Da said.
Or he'd have to be your son, Jack replied.
I had barely reached my teen years when Flora was gone, and I've kept out of your private affairs since I've been grown. Up until a few weeks ago, you kept out of mine, too. I liked that arrangement.
Well, I'm liking this new arrangement, Da replied, at least until I have my questions answered.
Flora said you were at her place tonight.
You're not courting her, are you?
Hell no. Jack was floored by the notion, even though Flora was closer to his age than Da's.
She's a fine woman. No need to get your hackles up.
Da took a sip of his whiskey.
If you weren't courting Flora, what were you doing there in the dead of the night?
Collecting Caroline Maxwell.
His father laughed. Collecting her? Is the girl not collected enough already?
She has her moments, Jack said. Her greater talent lay, however, in leaving him uncollected. At the thought of what had taken place in the carriage tonight, his smile was both involuntary and completely obvious.
Ah, now I see the way of it, Da said.
I'm sure you think you do, Jack said, but this evening's inquisition is at an end.
Da waved him off. I'd rather play billiards and make myself some money anyway.
Da was nearly unbeatable, so Jack escaped while he could. As he was trotting upstairs to the peace of his room, he noted an extra weight inside his coat pocket. He absently patted it and found the bulky shape of Caroline's pearls. He'd forgotten he had them. Jack shook his head at this slip-up. Tomorrow's work would have to wait. Harriet's picnic had just risen to the top of his list. By the crack of dawn on Wednesday morning, the Blue Seaside Salon had officially taken on every aspect of a war room. All the furniture had been pushed to the room's fringes, except for the library table anchoring the center of the room. A folding screen had been brought in for modest changes of clothing. Aide-de-camp, in this case Annie, Berta, and a parade of other servants, bustled in and out, delivering notes and food. Pomeroy stood guard from his pillow. All that was missing was a cot on which to sleep, and Mama could move in for the duration. Caroline stood at attention in her Artemis costume, while Helen and Amelia waited in line as Minerva, goddess of wisdom, and Demeter, goddess of harvest, respectively. And then there was Mama, who had a decidedly sharp edge this morning. She had not announced her costume, but Caroline felt that Bellona, Roman goddess of war, would be a good fit. Though on second thought, Caroline did not want to see what sort of damage Mama could wreak with both a spear and a torch. Her weapon of choice at the moment was silence toward her eldest daughter, and Caroline was bearing up only tolerably well under that punishment.
The V at the bosom is not deep enough, Mama said to the harried seamstress making adjustments to the white silk of Caroline's dress. Have I not told you that once already?
Caroline drew in a calming breath. It was difficult to keep her tongue when it appeared that Mama was mistaking virgin huntress Artemis for a manhunter goddess, Tartemis. Caroline knew her comments would not be well received, so she gave Helen an imploring look. Helen shook her head, no.
Please, Caroline mouthed.
Mama, Helen said with obvious hesitance.
Lower,
Mama commanded the seamstress.
Mama,
Helen repeated more firmly.
Ah, yes, perfect, Mama said.
Except if Caroline looked down the costume's décolletage, she could see all the way to the floor.
Mama,
Helen cried. Her mother finally looked her way.
Oh, for heaven's sake, what, Helen?
Caroline smiled her gratitude to her sister.
Do you know how you speak of a young woman's honor and how it must be protected, for it is a gift greater than gold?
Helen asked Mama.
Yes,
their mother said as she walked a circle around Caroline, inspecting her much as Bremerton likely would.
Well, Mama, I fear that dress exposes Caroline's honor to danger and her bosom to one and all.
Mrs. Longhorn, who was unrolling one of a dozen velvet jewelry pouches on the war table, nodded her head.
I must agree, Agnes.
After Caroline's reckless disappearance last night, we must regain Bremerton's attention and keep it, Mama replied to her friend.
Caroline couldn't stand silent another second. And so you think to achieve that by having the top of my dress disappear?
Mama wheeled on her.
If you are going to speak, make it a recitation of Bremerton's living relatives.
She flicked her hand toward Caroline's governess. Peek,
Debretz.
Even Peek knew better than to argue. She pulled the red tome from the table and opened it to the Duke of Ensley's listing. Caroline was not in the mood to cite chapter and verse, so she returned to silence, even when Mrs. Longhorn came close enough to peer down her dress.
Oh, dear, we do have an issue here, Mama's friend said.
Mama stepped closer to investigate the view.
You may bring the V up an inch, she told the seamstress.
Just an inch? Mrs. Longhorn asked.
She will be wearing a wide gold belt high on the waist, Mama replied. That will cinch in the fabric and take care of the rest of the problem.
But it would also accentuate Caroline's ample curves up top. Among her friends, she was the only one she knew who didn't have need to add padding to her dresses in order to attain the current fashionable proportions. But without the proper restraint, she felt so obvious. But that was Mama's strategy.
And not too much bulk, either, Mama said. Just one petticoat, I think.
You're lucky,
Amelia exclaimed. Her wheat-embroidered Demeter costume was so petticoated up that she reminded Caroline of a hay pile. Mama tapped her finger to her chin as she inspected Caroline's throat.
We want to keep the eye following the line of the dress. Perhaps the Russian pearl choker she wore last night, she said to Mrs. Longhorn, who had returned to the array of jewels.
Caroline's palms grew damp. She'd realized Jack still had the pearls as soon as she'd gotten into the house last night. She planned to find him today and reclaim them.
No, never mind, Mama said. We can't have Lord Bremerton seeing her in the same jewels twice.
She turned away from Caroline, who surreptitiously wiped her palms on the dress, earning a gasp from the seamstress.
She will wear the diamonds, I think, Mama said from her new spot next to Mrs. Longhorn. When you slip details about the ball to the Times and the Mercury, be sure to say that Caroline's gems were once Marie Antoinette's.
Were they?
Helen asked.
No, but the newspapers won't know the difference.
I'm glad they're not. I would hate for my sister to be wearing the jewels of someone who was beheaded. It seems like a bad omen, and Lord Bremerton seems like a walking bad omen as it is, Helen said.
Don't be silly, Mama replied. Lord Bremerton is a mannered, sophisticated gentleman.
She returned to stand nearly toe-to-toe with Caroline.
Last night was also your last hurrah, Caroline. We will not pretend that it did not happen, and we will place you under guard, if need be, between now and when Lord Bremerton begins to negotiate with your father regarding a marriage.
Yes, Mama, Caroline said.
What she thought was another matter entirely. Caroline's mother waved Peek over.
You will accompany Caroline and the twins to Harriet Vandermeulen's picnic at noon today. You will oversee her activities and report back to me on her behavior.
So I'm to be under guard already? Caroline asked.
Miss Peek is your governess.
Caroline took up the best compromise position she could think of.
No other girl there will have her governess as a shadow. Bremerton is sure to notice, and you don't want that.
A good point, her mother conceded.
Send Annie. Most of the girls will have their maids present.
Annie?
She gave Caroline's maid a narrow-eyed look.
Absolutely not. Peek will go as your maid.
It was difficult to decide who was more affronted by this decree, Peek or Annie.
But, ma'am,
Annie began, only to be cut off by Mama, who said,
Think carefully, young lady. Your next word could be your last as a Maxwell employee.
Annie nodded before joining the furniture on the edges of the room, and Peek glowered in silence.
There, Caroline's mother said in her first cheerful tones of the morning. See how easily that was handled. Compromise is a fine thing.
and when practiced by Mama, an entirely one-sided affair.
Chapter 12.
Do you think Lord Bremerton is here?
Amelia asked her sisters as they followed a pathway marked by potted daisies around the side of Thelmsford, the Vandermeulens' palatial cottage set on a rise overlooking Bailey's Beach.
Of course he is, Helen said.
He's going to be everywhere I don't want him to be, Caroline added. She had already shed Peake, sending her off with the others' ladies' maids inside the house. Bremerton wouldn't be so easily lost. Caroline adjusted her grip on the beribboned lavender parasol that matched her equally beribboned lavender dress. Though she was not much for fluff and lace, she had a soft spot for this particular dress. The narrow bands of white trim at the bottom of the skirt and the puffy leg-of-mutton sleeves felt quite stylish. She'd had Annie pin her hair more loosely atop her head in the style of a drawing by Charles Dana Gibson. Caroline had decided that these small pleasures would have to tide her over until she was free of the Englishman.
I don't know why the two of you think Lord Bremerton is so horrible, Amelia said. I think he's quite romantic. It's as though he carries the weight of a tragic past and will not speak because of it. You've been reading too many Bronte novels, Helen replied. There's nothing remotely tragic about him. He's bored silly by us and thinks himself a thousand times better. You have your opinion, and I have mine. But you'll both see, he simply needs to recover from a broken heart. Or the lack of one altogether, Helen suggested.
Caroline smiled. That at least would explain why he was so cold to the touch. They just rounded to the rear lawn, and Caroline was about to remind her sisters that the time had come to watch their words. Instead, all three pulled up and fell silent. Harriet Vandermeulen had put the sort of planning into this picnic that Caroline wouldn't bother with for a wedding, unless Jack was the groom, of course. The Vandermeulens had borrowed a flock of sheep to lend a more rustic appearance to their perfectly groomed property. The poor, blank-eyed creatures were penned in an enclosure decorated with large white bows. Two sullen-looking teenaged boys tended them. Each was dressed in a romanticized version of a shepherd's garb, complete with a matching bow at the neck. All the female servants had been dressed in colorful gingham frocks, and the linen-covered tables were adorned with low arrangements of wildflowers. Just past the picnic area, a fiddler sat playing high on a haystack while two cows chewed contentedly on his perch. Harriet approached. She glowed with happiness in her rosy pink dress and wide-brimmed hat decorated with fat bunches of cherries.
"Thank you for coming," she said to the girls. "It is a glorious day for a picnic, isn't it?"
Caroline quickly scanned the dark-coated men at the gathering, mentally charting a course that would keep her far from Lord Bremerton. Instead, she came up minus a Bremerton and plus a Jack. He looked her way and smiled.
"Absolutely perfect," she replied to Harriet.
Amelia and Helen went off to a group of their friends, while Harriet led Caroline toward the cluster of guests that included Jack.
"It's going very well between Jack and me," Harriet said as they strolled.
"In what way?" Caroline asked.
"He's very charming and attentive."
"Jack is a nice man," Caroline said, attempting to keep at least the appearance of neutrality regarding Harriet's campaign.
"And my father has already talked to Jack's father. Since Jack is here, I have to believe he's agreeable to a marriage."
"Interesting," Caroline replied.
"And I have good news for you as well," Harriet said. "Lord Bremerton is here. Everyone is quite taken with him. I think you will be, too. He's seeing the grounds with Alice Ames and should be back at any moment. I'll introduce you right away."
Caroline could work up no false enthusiasm.
"There's no rush. I met Lord Bremerton yesterday evening."
Harriet's perfectly shaped mouth turned downward.
"Oh, I was hoping to be the one to make the introduction. It would be a wonderful story to tell our grandchildren someday. But at least I have seated him at our table, so I can tell him all the wonderful things I know about you, and you can do the same for me with Jack."
"Naturally," Caroline said. They had reached Jack. He stood in the middle of a cluster of girls with Caroline's brother Charles and poor, graceless Gordy Bullard.
Harriet cut her way through the throng with a charming yet relentless efficiency, telling the others that luncheon would soon be served, and perhaps they'd like to find their tables. Jack took a step toward Caroline and began to say hello. Harriet moved between them and edged close to Jack, close enough that Caroline did not appreciate it.
"Jack, you will be sitting with me," Harriet said. "Caroline will be joining us with Lord Bremerton, and the table will be rounded out by Caroline's sister, Helen, and Alice Ames. Shall we?"
She tilted her head at an inquisitive angle, clearly waiting for Jack to act as her escort to the table. He held out his arm. Harriet latched on like a steel trap. Caroline followed behind and permitted herself one unladylike roll of her eyes. Jack chose that instant to look over his shoulder. He grinned, and she smiled back. The three of them hadn't been seated long when Bremerton and Alice Ames returned, and Helen made her way over. Jack rose. Bremerton's gaze flicked past him and Harriet and settled on Caroline.
"Focus on the small pleasures," she reminded herself, preparing herself for his icy attitude.
But Bremerton beamed.
"Hello again, Miss Maxwell," he said, in a voice that oozed warmth and admiration. "You look radiant today, a true American beauty."
If Amelia's theory had been correct, Bremerton had just set a new world's record for recovery from a broken heart.
"Thank you,"
Caroline said, surprised that words had managed to work their way past her disbelief. Jack, who had greeted Helen and Alice, acknowledged Bremerton after they had each held a chair for the girls.
"Lord Bremerton?" "Mr. Culhane," Bremerton said collegially. "Jack, is it?"
Jack looked exactly as suspicious as Caroline felt.
"Yes, it is,"
he said, as both Bremerton and he sat.
"I do recall those two names, though last night there seemed to be quite a few others packed between them," Bremerton said. "You must have an interesting tale behind that."
"Please share it, Jack. I feel so deprived not having been there with you last night," Harriet said,
and then shot a very pointed look Caroline's way. Caroline understood the territorial statement. Jack was now the pinto hobby horse of their childhood, and Caroline was to keep her hands off. Jack gave Harriet a half-smile, as though he couldn't see what all the fuss was about. He apparently hadn't believed Caroline's warning about the extent of Harriet's ardor.
"My late mother fell ill before my birth and was told by her doctors that recovery, let alone more children, wasn't likely," he said. "She had wanted a large family, so I was given all the names."
"That's very touching, don't you think, Lord Bremerton?" Harriet asked.
"Quite," he replied.
Anyone who had not encountered him last night would think he was sincere, but the hairs on Caroline's arm still rose when he spoke, and she would put her faith in arm hair over the Englishman any day of the week. Harriet forged on.
"Do you want a large family, Jack?"
17-year-old Alice Ames gasped at Harriet's audacity. The query had been as blatant as Mama's idea of an Artemis costume.
"I haven't thought about it," Jack replied.
"But you would like a son to take on your name and inherit, wouldn't you?" Harriet asked.
"I don't know. Having a son simply to be left my belongings, goods, or carry on my name seems a pretty self-centered reason to bring a child into the world."
"What reason would you suggest for procreation, then?" Bremerton asked.
"Love,"
Jack said.
"Ah, of course," Bremerton said.
"I believe that's a given for every human being. And while my future title demands that I marry in order to protect the line, I will do so only with the prospect of a deep and lifelong love."
He fixed his gaze on Caroline.
"It is what every woman deserves."
Young Alice sighed sweetly while Helen made a choking sound. Caroline clenched her hands beneath the table, wishing she were a man and could punch Bremerton's long nose for this absurd deception. But she could try to push him until his shiny new veneer of caring cracked.
"Yes, it is," she said, "and every woman deserves to have a voice in her world, or we are a little different from the sheep in that pen."
"I feel horrible for the sheep,"
Harriet said with a delicate shudder.
"I begged my father to let them wander, but he wouldn't hear of it."
"I can guarantee they've been in less happy places than that pen," Jack said. "Though I can't necessarily say the same for the shepherds."
Caroline laughed. Harriet looked up at Jack, which was no small feat since they were sitting down.
It's so kind of you to comfort me.
Are you saying that ladies can be likened to sheep? Alice asked Caroline.
She sounded more intrigued than offended.
I am saying that sometimes we are treated like livestock, Caroline replied. We are given no more options than they are.
We're certainly not sheep,
Harriet said, clearly irritated that the conversation was veering away from her.
And I don't live in a pen.
Caroline doesn't mean it literally, Harriet, Helen said.
Then is this about not having the vote? Are you a suffragist with that Susan B. Anthony?
I am a member of her association, Caroline said, and I have been lucky enough to hear Miss Anthony speak twice.
Jack smiled across the table at her.
That must have taken some maneuvering on your part.
I'm becoming fairly adept at that sort of thing.
He laughed.
I'll bet you are.
Harriet took a quick sip of her ice water and put down her glass with more force than necessary.
I have no desire to follow politics or business.
We all have different interests, but I was referring to a choice in love, actually, Caroline said to Harriet, as a large luncheon platter was set down in front of her.
She glanced at the slices of crusty French bread and the makings of a sandwich of one's choice. The meats and cheeses had been arranged like flowers. Caroline had a fundamental objection to flowers of meat, and she was growing to object to Harriet, too.
We can all choose to love the man we wed, Harriet said, looking at Jack. I think it would be very easy to do so.
In some cases, yes, Caroline replied, while she busied herself placing her napkin on her lap.
If she even glanced Jack's way, the entire table would know how she felt about him.
But think how much better life would be if we could choose to love before we choose to marry.
Jack had another life-improving choice to add to Caroline's suggestion, escaping this table. Luckily, he'd already laid the groundwork for his departure. He needed to use it now, before he committed the apparent sin of making a direct comment. He pulled out his pocket watch, checked it, and closed it with a snap.
I'm afraid it's time for me to leave, he said to Harriet.
I know you said you had another engagement that you might have to attend to, but you haven't even eaten, she said, pouting. Please stay a while longer.
Jack wasn't about to touch a plate that had been served to him by Caroline's governess, Peek. How Caroline had just missed her in that ill-fitting pink gingham dress, and why she was acting as one of the Vandermeulen staff were both beyond him.
It's unavoidable, he said to Harriet, doing his best to sound disappointed.
Let me walk you out, she offered.
No, no, I'll be fine. Please stay with your other guests.
He smiled at Caroline, who, without speaking, conveyed her irritation at his escape. But he had plans for her, too.
If you insist, Harriet said. I look forward to seeing you again very soon.
Jack replied with a noncommittal thank you and said goodbye to everyone else. As he made his way past the sheep pen, he stopped near the so-called shepherd guarding the gate. He was a young man of stocky build and not especially suited to wearing a big white bow.
You don't look happy, Jack said. Would you like a new job?
The younger man cocked his head.
What would it be paying?
Ah, so the not-quite-real shepherd was Irish.
If it gets you out of that ridiculous costume, do you even care?
Not so much, sir, he said. But I'd be a fool not to be asking.
Where are you from?
Dunglow, County Donegal, sir.
Jack grinned. That was a stone's throw from Da's old home.
But how much are you paying? You still haven't told me.
And he was persistent like Da, too.
$25 a month and room and board, of course.
That's twice what I'm making now.
The pretend shepherd tugged the bow from his neck and threw it in with the sheep.
Done.
He fell in step beside Jack.
What's your name?
Jack asked as they walked toward the front of the house.
Fintan O'Toole, he said.
How old are you, O'Toole?
17. 18 next month.
No wife?
Huh, I can hardly support myself. Well, now I can, but I'm still wanting no wife.
O'Toole, you're now my personal secretary.
He glanced the younger man's way and thought he might be wise to cover a few of the job's requirements.
You can read, can't you?
Aye.
And you like beer?
I'd never be drinking on the job, sir, O'Toole said.
That's good, but do you like beer?
Aye, sir.
Then you're going to be one very happy personal secretary.
O'Toole grinned. I near trilled already, just getting rid of that bow.
Once they were at the carriage, Jack dug into the carriage box. He tucked a telegram from Gustav Miller about the Philadelphia brewery in there. Jack handed it to O'Toole.
Bring this to Miss Caroline Maxwell. She's the woman in lavender sitting at the same table as Miss Vandermeulen. Tell her it just arrived for her.
Aye, sir, O'Toole said as he glanced at the paper. Am I waiting for some sort of reply? Though I can't think what Miss Maxwell might be saying since this is addressed to you.
Jack smiled.
That's half the fun of Miss Maxwell, seeing what she might do next.
Caroline gazed diffidently at the French bread in front of her. She had no appetite, and for a man who'd recently made a rescue at sea, Jack had quickly forgotten the time-honored tradition of women and children first when abandoning a sinking ship. Heaven knew this meal was that and worse for Caroline.
Do you enjoy watching polo, Miss Maxwell? Lord Bremerton asked.
When my brother is playing, I do, she replied.
Perhaps you could extend that pleasure. I'll be playing at the Westchester Polo Club immediately after this. Would you do me the honor of watching?
He seemed to be determined to play the chivalrous swain.
I'm afraid I'm otherwise occupied today, she said. But Caroline, you know we were all to go to the polo field this afternoon, Harriet said. My mother has need of me at home, she fibbed.
Ah, I see, Bremerton said, and I fully understand. As we chatted about last night, we all must meet our family's expectations.
What a lovely threat disguised in sunshine, Caroline thought. She was about to reply when a young man who looked suspiciously like one of the shepherds approached the table.
Miss Maxwell, begging your pardon, but this telegram was just delivered for you.
Caroline never received telegrams, especially from shepherds.
Thank you, she said, accepting it. Will you be nearby if I need to respond?
I'll be right by the house, miss.
The young man executed a sketchy half-bow and retreated. Caroline unfolded the paper, read it, and put on a businesslike face.
I'm afraid I need to step away from the table for a few minutes, she said. It's not anything to do with the family, is it?
Helen asked in an alarmed voice.
No, nothing at all,
Caroline said as she worked back her wooden folding chair and rose.
It's from an acquaintance I made in London last year. She has asked me to attend her wedding, which is taking place quickly before her betrothed must go to India on government business.
Bremerton, who had risen with her, said,
Who is the bride? Perhaps I know her.
Caroline mentally berated herself for committing the very amateur error of providing unneeded detail. Years with Mama had taught her to opt for short answers, but the lure of Jack without Harriet appended to him had distracted her.
I don't think you'd know her, Lord Bremerton. My friend is a very private person.
And I'm sure that if you wait until you return to Mrs. Longhorn's house to respond, the difference will never be known, Bremerton said.
True, but the social whirl is so much these days that I might forget.
She stepped away from the table.
Please eat without me. I would feel wrong holding you up.
Caroline was winding her way through the other tables when she saw Peek in a pink gingham dress heading her way. In point of fact, the governess was intently tracking her. Caroline wondered who inside the house now wore Peek's standard severe black dress. Whoever the woman was, she had a smaller stature than Peek's. The governess looked ready to explode out of her pink gingham, but she was nothing if not determined.
Miss Maxwell, Peek called. A moment, please.
Caroline fainted right, but then went left around the last table. Peek was detained by one of the guests who was holding out a fork and making some comment about its cleanliness. Once Caroline had cleared Peek, she made her way across the grounds at as quick a pace as she could without actually running. The farther she got from the picnic, the more her smile grew. She reached the false shepherd who waited for her at the top of the potted daisy path.
Where will I find Mr. Culhane? She asked him.
In his carriage, ma'am.
Thank you, she said.
'Tis my pleasure, he replied, this time with a sweeping bow.
Laughing, Caroline approached Jack's carriage. A few servants milled about, but no one who she felt concerned would gossip.
Jack's coachman helped her into the carriage and then closed the door after her. She settled next to Jack.
"That was one tidy escape," she said.
"Jealous?"
"A little," she confessed. "I couldn't think of a way to leave for good without conjuring up a story that would alarm Helen."
"It sounds as though you need more practice with your maneuvering."
"With Lord Bremerton around, I'm destined to get it. And speaking of maneuvers," she held out her hand, "I believe you have something of mine?"
Jack reached into his coat pocket and dangled her pearl choker from his fingertips. She reached for it, but he repocketed it.
"I had intended to exact a price for their return later this afternoon," he said.
She was optimistic it would involve more kissing.
"Such as?"
"A walk."
"A walk? That was not even close."
"Yes, a normal daytime excursion such as two friends might take. Touro Park, maybe."
"Is that what we are, Jack? Friends?"
He smiled.
"I hope we are."
"And I hope you don't kiss all your friends as you did me last night."
"Very few."
She wanted to ask if he'd ever kissed Harriet, but that was her own growing envy coming to the fore. Jack's behavior with Harriet was completely circumspect.
"Then we are more than friends," she said.
He sat silent for a moment.
"We are what we are, Caroline."
She moved closer.
"And what is that?"
"At the moment, on dangerous footing," he said, inclining his head toward the window.
Peek paced outside, but she hadn't yet spotted Caroline. If she had, she'd be pounding at the carriage door. Caroline lowered the shades 3/4 of the way to cut Peek's view.
"Our footing might seem dangerous to you, but it's the most solid thing I have in my life right now," she said.
"At least the Englishman has decided to be civil."
"Which is all the worse. You see what Bremerton is doing today, don't you? He's being all charm, the perfect suitor, and he'll continue that charade. My mother and father are going to be drawn in, just as everyone else has been, and if I don't marry him, I'll look like the most ungrateful daughter ever."
"You're getting ahead of yourself, aren't you?"
Jack asked.
"You didn't mention that he proposed last night."
"He has said he will. I am, in his words, the most suitable heiress, and I will do what I must to become the least suitable."
Jack sat silent. He wore the impassive face she had thought was gone forever after last night. Her frustration was so hot that if she didn't release it, she would burn.
"You don't have any idea what I'm going through, do you? You're here and you're helpful and you certainly kiss very well, but you don't see things as I do," Caroline said. "I'm subjected to Harriet pursuing you. I watch her simper. I listen to her drop marriage hints. I'm sure it doesn't bother you at all to see Bremerton, but that's because you don't love me. I, on the other hand, love you, Jack Culhane, and that makes all the difference."
Caroline's heart pounded as the realization of what she'd just said hit her. Then relief set in. The words were out, and she could breathe. It had grown very quiet inside the carriage, though. Her sense of relief thinned and quickly disappeared as Jack sat there saying nothing at all. She'd never seen him this deadly serious. He leaned across her and opened the window shades. Then he drew the choker from his pocket.
"Come closer," he said calmly.
She did, and he clasped the pearls around her neck.
"Now you're just as you were last night," he said.
Except she wasn't, and neither was he. They never would be again.
Chapter 13. "I shouldn't have come here," Flora said to Patrick Culhane.
"What?" "Touro Park is a public place," he replied, "and we're two old friends strolling on a Wednesday afternoon. There's no scandal in that."
Flora breathed in the fresh, clean air. The park was glorious, with its lush lawns, sweeping elms, broad pathways, and statuary. "It's not scandal that concerns me." He smiled as he took in her dress, which, while cut appropriately for the hour of the day, was a bright crimson.
"I'm thinking not," he said.
"Color makes me feel as though I'm on stage. Sometimes I miss that excitement, the thrill of becoming someone other than who I am."
"I was always just fine with who you were."
He took a seat on a park bench and patted its wooden slats.
"Come sit by me."
Flora chose the opposite end.
Patrick tipped back his head and let loose a full-hearted laugh she loved hearing.
You can do better than that.
Smiling, she moved closer, but still kept a circumspect amount of daylight between them.
And that's as close as you'll come? I've been closer to a nun.
Yes, in church, she said.
True enough, he agreed.
They sat in companionable silence until Patrick asked,
So do you want to talk about it?
About what?
Don't be pretending I don't know you, he admonished. What is it that has you so quiet?
He was right. The years apart didn't seem to have changed a thing. I don't even want to say it aloud.
Well, now you've got me worried, so you have to.
I'm lonely, she said, feeling better for even having made the confession. And I don't want to be lonely anymore.
You lonely?
It is possible, you know. He shook his head.
If you're lonely, it's because you choose to be. Look at you. You're a breathtaking woman who just so happens to have a bank balance that would stop most men's hearts. If you want a man, smile once and a pack will come running.
It's not a man I'm lonely for, she said. Patrick gave her an odd look. Laughing, she added, It's not a woman either. And while I'd be a liar to tell you that I don't miss the closeness of a man at night, or things as basic as sitting across the breakfast table from him, what I miss most right now is having connections. Clem didn't have family, and as you know, mine cut me off when I took to the stage. I have no interest in going to them now, but I wish I'd had children.
It never happened for you?
No. Patrick sighed.
I'm sorry for that. I wish I could have wanted it when you did, but I had Jack to deal with, and he was a busy enough boy to earn all of his names.
Laura smiled. I remember. You did well. He's a fine man.
That he is.
He nudged his top hat back a bit so that it no longer shattered his face, and then settled his arm across the back of the bench.
I know he's grown, and I should be booting him out of my house, or houses, he said,
gesturing at a somewhat tired-looking villa across the street, just past the old stone tower by which they sat.
But I can't bring myself to do it.
I'd be the same way, she said. It's not easy being alone, even with a house full of servants. He looked at her, humor evident in his blue eyes.
So what do you say? Will you move a little closer to me? I might be feeling lonely, too.
Flora laughed. You're as bold as ever.
Bolder now that I've got no time left to waste.
And that is why I'm keeping my distance, Flora replied. He laughed. I'm quite serious, Patrick. You might talk me into coming too close. I can play at tennis and play at being a grand lady, but I can't end up playing at being your sweetheart again.
You were my sweetheart, he said calmly. It was no game. If you'll be remembering, you were my lover, too.
She nodded. I know. But while I might make an astounding variety of mistakes, I try not to make the same one twice.
And what made us a mistake?
She'd spent a great deal of time lately thinking about past choices. I expected you to be someone you're not. I tried to push you into changing when you're as unmovable as that stone tower. Patrick chuckled.
You'll note the tower's top is gone. It's done some moving in its years, whether it wanted to or not. I have too. And neither of us is looking any better for the wear.
Flora had to laugh. Don't mind for compliments.
Then give them more freely, he said.
She'd been about to offer one when Jack rounded the old stone tower. He stood with his back to them, each hand gripping a spear of the sharp wrought iron fence that circled the structure's arched base. Do you see who I do? She asked Patrick.
Aye, he said. And I don't have to see my boy's face to know he's in a mood.
Patrick stood. Maybe you should just let him be alone with his thoughts, she suggested.
You know as well as I that thoughts can be cold company, he said as he came to her and offered his hand.
Patrick had always been a smart man. Flora accepted his help and walked with him to see his son.
So you're doing some sightseeing, are you? Asked a familiar voice to Jack's right.
Da had joined him, along with Flora. He said hello.
Flora sounded somewhat hesitant as she returned the greeting. His dark mood must have worked its way to his face.
I hired a personal secretary, Jack said to his father, trying to keep the conversation far away from what bothered him.
Da cocked his head.
Which has what to do with this Norseman's tower? It wasn't built by Norsemen.
No matter what the name, even Jack's untrained eye could tell the structure was too new. And while it might amuse Newporters to think that Europeans had first landed here, why would one half-ruined tower sit as the only marker?
I'm just reading the sign, Da said. That one, and a few others, actually.
Jack didn't care to engage.
My secretary's name is Fintan O'Toole, and he's from Dunglow, County Donegal.
Which should be enough to distract Da, he figured.
And has he any experience?
Da asked, skipping right over the seed of home turf Jack had planted.
None.
Da laughed.
Of course not. I've had Wilton give him a room. Grand, now that we've got that out of the way, would you care to talk about why you're glaring at this heap of stones?
Patrick, Flora said.
I've told the boy I've got license to pry into his life, and so I'm prying, his father replied.
And doing a thorough job of it, too. To Jack, she said, shall I step away and give you two your privacy?
No, he replied. Your family, and you know what's going on.
It's Caroline, isn't it? She asked.
I knew it, Don nearly crowed. You are sweet on her, aren't you? Caroline and sweet don't belong in the same sentence, Jack replied.
Da should try Caroline and trouble, or better yet, Caroline and disaster. Flora settled her hand on Da's shoulder. I think we should continue our walk and let Jack have some time to himself.
Ha!
Jack shook his head.
Walks. Friends take walks all the damn time. Why not take a walk?
Have you been drinking, son?
Da asked after a silence.
No. I'm almost sorry to hear it.
Jack let out a long, slow breath.
I'm sorry. I'm not making much sense, and I apologize for the rude language, Flora.
It's quite